Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, December 6th.
Good morning.
LA is on fire.
It is. Good morning.
Yes, people have called in. They won't be able to come in. But, you know, this is like the museum, the Getty Center. And it's very close to very close to us. Mm-hmm. So this is very worrisome. I guess they closed down the 405, like, mm-hmm. you know, 9 miles or something.
Yeah.
And the traffic is probably horrendous. Did you feel any bad traffic this morning?
Not this morning because I was going, I was almost going towards the fire. So I saw images on Twitter of, like, the 405 in a certain part of the freeway, and there's no cars there, you know, because they're shutting it down, right, as they should. And then I saw Bridget, she was a guest. She put up a status on Twitter that she was like, you know, like, if you don't have to drive in LA today on these freeways, don't stay off them. Keep them safe for the first responders and everything so they can get to and from, you know, quickly. And I thought that was a good post. So, hopefully.
Yeah, people should stay at home if they don't have to go anywhere. Yeah. That's a good idea, right? Wow. Yeah, I mean, this is close to UCLA and Bel Air. So, and I'm looking at the pictures here, and it's just mind-boggling to see how this can happen here. And, of course, the fires in Ventura County are still going on. And they're saying the fires could go on for days. So, you know, that's scary, man. And our skies have been full of smoke and yeah, just the smell in the air and everything. So obviously we don't suffer from this just from the smells. There's people that have to evacuate and lose everything and stuff. And that's crazy, man. That's crazy, you know. And you don't think it's going to happen inside the city, but it does. It always makes you wonder who starts those fires, you know. How do they start?
Well, I mean, that's living in California. I mean, we have the perfect weather. I hate to say the perfect weather condition because it's the worst. But we have the ideal weather conditions for this type of natural disaster.
Right.
You know, so
yeah. But I have a feeling many of the people start them. You know, and it just the brush just keeps going, man. And there's no end to it, and everything is dry in the fall and stuff. So, nothing to stop the fire, you know. Already 83,000 acres, man. Do you know how much that is? Mm-hmm. I mean, tens of thousands of people are saying have been evacuated. You know, that's a lot. It's a lot of people in Ventura County and stuff. And they actually created they put together a curfew in Ventura. Beginning 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. to protect residents and prevent crime, you know, like looting and things like that in evacuation areas. People always take advantage. So many people, 38,000 people have been told to evacuate.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Mass exodus. About 150,000 people in L.A. were under evacuation. Wow. Power outage. School closures. So, yeah, the fire is pretty close to Magic Mountain, too. All the rides and everything. So we'll see what happens. But my heart goes out to all the people that have to deal with this. I mean, I can't see how it can get any worse, you know? Yeah, well, in a few minutes, folks, a guest is going to call in. This is a guest we had on for a few minutes, and then the call went berserk. So he's calling back in. We're going to be talking about relationships and positive thinking and all that stuff. So it's pretty interesting stuff. What you got going on, Rachel? Anything new?
No, just hate tweeting the president, you know.
Oh, you hate tweeting the president. Okay.
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah, basically. I have the alert set up on my phone. So, like, midway through this chat, you know, I'll get these alerts, and like immediately I need to go in and respond because that's how I beat the troll. It's complicated, but What's going on with me? Last night I went and did a show in West Hollywood at Rage. I did some time there. So that
How
was
did
cool.
it go?
It went good. My friend who was hosting the show, it's her show. You met Vanessa. She was like, go up and do 10 minutes and stall. And I'm like, I was like, fuck, stall. And then it just got in my head. So I'm like standing up there like,
stalling.
You know? But whatever. It was still good. Grateful for her and for the stage time. And then tomorrow, me and my friend Esther Koo, who you've also met. You met all my friends.
Yes.
We're going to drive to Vegas, and we're going to go perform at the Rampart Casino in
Where's
Las Vegas. It's honestly up by where my family lives in Summerlin.
Oh,
so it
okay.
used to be the Marriott, the JW Marriott, but that was probably like after your time too.
Yeah, I don't even know where Marriott is.
It's in Summerlin.
Summerlin, yeah.
It's off Rampart. I don't know if you know Rampart area.
No, I don't.
But yeah, so we're doing that, and it should be an interesting show. Like, my sister has a ton of friends coming, but I feel like it's going to be kind of an older demographic. So I'm like, I don't want to curb my material, but I also, you know, want to be relatable to the audience. So, and I'm working out a ton of bits. Like, there's so much I want to talk about. I haven't even delved into any, like, so certain parts of my life, like about how, like, I went to boarding school in Utah that was ran by a bunch of Mormons. Like, I haven't even touched on that in yeah. any of my stand-up. And I just started talking more about, like, my relation, you know, how I was a huge tomboy growing up. And, like, my dad, you know, was always trying to make me more feminine. So he would, like, burp and fart shame my sister and I and, like, try to make us carry a purse.
Oh, good.
And then my mom, like, made us more, like, she made us keep our hair short. So, like, I looked like a boy trying to be a girl. I had a lot of problems growing up, and but
you can't change a person. You know, I mean, my daughter was we try to make her very feminine. She was a tomboy, and she's still a tomboy, you know?
Right.
So you never know, you know, it's just like, it's different. People are born with their own personalities, their own temperament, and, you know, you don't know, but that's funny what your dad, what your dad did. Now, in your comedy, do you tell people who your dad is?
I don't. I mean, I do. I do say. I say, like, he's the district attorney of Las Vegas. I mean, I guess I do say.
You do, right?
Yeah.
So they can trace you back to him.
They can. I had someone at the show yesterday come up to me after and was like, "Did your mom really put O.J. Simpson in prison?" I was like, "Yes, but also, who would make something like that up?"
You know? Right. Like, Wow, that's funny. So, some stuff happening in the news. I guess Hugh Jackman turned down the part of the role of James Bond.
Really?
They came to him, I guess, and he was set to do X-Men 2. And then his agent came and told him about, doing 007. And so I guess...
I wonder why.
So, well, he says that, I feel that the scripts have become so unbelievable and crazy, and I felt they needed to become more...
realistic?
More real. So the response was, oh, no, you don't get a say. You have to sign, you just have to sign on. So he figures, I guess at this point in his life, he wants to be able to have a say in what he does. So... that's that. But wouldn't you like to be in a position where you can turn down a James Bond role?
Right.
Right. But he's Hugh Jackman. He's huge.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to ask you about, like, what your thoughts are on Donald Trump moving the Capitol. Is it the Capitol to Jerusalem?
Well, he's not moving the Capitol.
It's the embassy?
The embassy the from embassy. Tel Aviv.
From Tel Aviv, which it's always been there?
Yeah. Yeah. So the reason is that everybody, pretty much everybody, has decided that Jerusalem does not belong to Israel. So that's why no president before that has moved the embassy, although they've thought about it. Yeah. But, you know, all embassies are in capitals. And you know, so the question becomes is, like, what other country has a situation where other countries decide for it what your capital is.
Right. Yeah. Right. So are you on the side of, like, if it's not broke, don't fix it? Like, why are you doing this? Or are you like, yeah, it should be in Jerusalem?
Well, Look, moving it is going to start bloodshed.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? But, like, why would we...
But
why would
do we, you make... But I mean, do you make decisions based on someone who's threatening you?
Well, what I'm saying is that why he's making the decision? Is it's based on someone who's threatening him?
No. What they're saying is that if he does that, the mm-hmm. Palestinians are threatening to have another rebellion.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. Of course, you don't make decisions based on that, but it's like... He's obviously doing this as like a. It's, it seems as if the it's a distraction to distract, and it's like, dude, you're gonna cause a lot of unnecessary bloodshed. You know what I mean? Like,
but you know, that's the thing again is that you have to ask. First of all, during his campaign, he promised he would do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's keeping his promises. He has to follow through. Now, look, for Israel, that would be an amazing thing because America is the closest ally, always has been. And,
right. But we also as Jews, we tend to obviously side with Israel, of course. Naturally. Right. But I, as a human, I have to step outside of just me being a Jewish person and think of humanity and think, you know, this is going to cause a lot of problems.
Right. But why?
And to me, I don't think I'm a Jew. Yes, but it's not that I'm like Israel doesn't belong to the Jews because it's not like America belongs to the Christians. We live in America. You know, we live in this country. It's not... Is it a religious country? Yeah. Are there Christians living in it? Yeah. But I mean... It's,
but Israel it goes, is based on Jewish
I know, but
people.
That's what I'm saying is it yeah. goes so far back to World War II and like what, you know, Europe and America did with the Jews when they didn't have a place to go from leaving Germany. You know what I mean? And it's complicated because also Palestinians have such rich history there as well. And we can't discount that just for the sake of, you know, whatever. So it's complicated. We have to admit it's a complicated region that is ran by occupied by the three most powerful religions in the world. And there's a lot of problems when you have a country that's, you know, religion based, I think.
Mm. Okay.
It makes it complicated.
Yeah, it is complicated, but it's also simple. Jews have been in Jerusalem for thousands of years. We've had
two temples.
No, Palestinians, there's no such thing as Palestinians a few years ago. You know, I mean, there were Arabs living on the land.
It used to be called Palestine.
By the British. But what does that have to do with anything?
Because Palestinians lived there.
No. So Jews could be Palestinians too. I mean, what
right.
is it?
That, well, that's okay, what I'm saying.
Okay, but no, Israel became Israel. And but
there
that's
are
the
also
thing.
Arab
to
Jews too. We can't, you know what
right.
I'm saying? So
yeah.
it's like there has right. to be a place.
No, Arab Jews are okay with living in Israel, you know? You're talking about Israeli Arabs.
I'm talking about that, but I'm also talking about there are Arabs there who aren't Jewish, who are Christian or Muslim or whatever.
Right, right.
Who
and
also,
they have no problem with
Jerusalem.
Okay,
good. As long
Jerusalem.
As they don't have a problem, then, you know.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you, it is a very inflammatory thing.
It seems very
thing.
Complicated, though.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, okay, like you said, very simple.
All right. Well, let's take our guest right now, and we can get back to that later. David, are you with us? David Essel?
Hey, yeah.
Good morning, David. Thank you for calling us back. I reminded the listeners that last time you were on the show, we had some telephone problems. So I'm glad you're calling us back today.
Yes, great to be with you. And is Rachel with you?
Rachel is here, always. David,
hey, how are you?
Remind us where you're calling from.
Oh,
where do you live?
Fort Myers, Florida, Sam.
Oh, Fort Myers, Florida. Okay, that's cool. So, that's nice. You know, I mean, people are moving to L.A., but we've got fires here. So, Florida sounds pretty good right now, you know.
Well, you know, any place that's beautiful is going to have some kind of a challenge, right?
Right. There you go. Have you lived there all your life, David, in Florida?
You know, I've been here most of my life. I grew up in Syracuse, New York. Went to school at Syracuse University and then moved down to Florida. So I've been here a very long time and absolutely love it.
That's cool, man. That's very cool. What am I hearing here? Do we have a video going on? Oh, okay. We're good. So we're joined by David Essel. You're an author, inspirational speaker, life coach, counselor, radio, TV host. So you do a lot of things, David. Tell us a little bit about, you focus on positive thinking. Your book is actually positive thinking will never change your life, but this book will. Tell us a little bit about that, because that's sort of contrary to what people think about positive thinking.
You know what, guys? For the first 6 years of my career, what I believe now to be true and what I know to be true is an exact opposition to what I taught for the first 16 years of my life.
Wow.
So, you know, it's been a really interesting transformation. From 1980 to 1996, I was one of those guys in stages all over the world saying, whatever you believe you can achieve and your thoughts become the stuff that you want. And Sam and Rachel, I was lying.
Really? So
I was lying. I was being a parrot. I was looking at the speakers before me and repeating what they were saying was true, because maybe it was true for them. But in 1996, and I write about the complete story in the book, but I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the name I'm going to mention. He was the founder of Transcendental Meditation.
Uh-huh.
His name is, he's no longer with us, but his name was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
Right, I remember.
One
that.
Of the most, are you familiar?
Yes, I remember. Go ahead.
Yeah. And you know, the Beatles are the ones that really helped Maharishi take his transcendental meditation around the world. But I was fortunate as a radio host to interview Maharishi. Oh. On the 40th anniversary of Transcendental Meditation, they chose my radio show to do this big celebration. And it was during that show that he posed a question to me that blew apart all of my beliefs about positive thinking. And he said this. He said, David, all of your affirmations that you've been saying for years, every morning, have they all come true? Have the biggest ones come true? And the answer, guys, was no. You know, yeah. I was waking up every morning and saying, I'm a child of God, happy, healthy, and sober today. And I was an alcoholic and a cocaine addict at night.
Wow.
So he blew my mind. You know, here's a guy that teaches the power of the mind, and he's calling me out saying, your affirmations aren't working.
Right?
Does that make sense, Sam?
Yeah. I mean, you know, people talk about manifesting things and stuff, but, you know, I think you got to do something, right? I mean, it's all about action. Am I correct?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And in our book, Positive Thinking Will Never Change Your Life, but this book will, we give over 100 stories of people that used to believe in the power of thought to change their life, but then they found something in common. And that something as common as this, and it's part of what you just said, Sam. The real key to success is action, but mm-hmm. what we describe in the book, it's a certain kind of action.
Mm.
And as your listeners right now tuning in want to change their weight, maybe they want to drop an addiction, maybe they want to find deep love or save their current relationship or find the career that they have passion for, it's only going to happen if your action steps are in the realm of being uncomfortable on a daily basis.
Mm.
And that's really what separates the master success people in this world from those who aren't. You know, I've got a great story. You guys are familiar, of course, with the late Wayne Dyer.
Yes. Wayne Dyer? Oh, I read most of his books. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. So he was a mentor of mine, and I dedicated this book, Positive Thinking Will Never Change Your Life, to Wayne Dyer, believe it or not.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
And he's probably rolling in his grave going, oh, my God, you know, like laughing. But you know, like one of the things that we have to understand is Wayne Dyer told me a story when he first published his very first book, Your Erroneous Song.
Yes, I read that back in the 70s. You know, that one transformed my life. I got to tell you, I was about 17. Go ahead. So that was his first book?
Sam, yeah. It's an incredible book. And I said to him, how did your first book become so popular? Because that's not a really sexy title.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Your Erroneous Songs, it's not a real sexy title, even though it's a play on sexuality. And he said, I'm going to tell you what I did. When the book came out, I drove to every bookstore within driving distance and bought every book off the shelf, David.
Oh my God.
And all of a sudden my publisher is calling me saying, Wayne, we don't know how this is happening, but all these bookstores are reordering double the amount that they ordered last month.
Wow.
And Wayne went out there and created demand.
Yes.
By doing something that is uncomfortable, and that's spending his own money on his own books.
Right. Wow.
And, you know, these are the steps, Sam. You know, when, like, there's a story, we have a brand new book coming out in January. It's called Focus. Mm-hmm. And there's a story in there I share about a woman, a friend of mine, Evelyn, who lost 245 pounds.
Wow.
Now imagine that.
Yeah, yeah.
Not only did she lose 245 pounds, but she went on in her 50s to become a bodybuilder.
Are you serious? Now, wow. 250 pounds, and then, like, you become a bodybuilder.
Yeah, she, like, it, and 2 years ago in Vegas, she walked on stage at a competition in front of 15,000 screaming fans who had seen her picture to the left of the stage, 245 pounds heavier, and then she comes out with this gorgeous body in her 50s. Now, teasingly, I asked her which affirmation did she use to get that body.
Yeah.
And you guys know what the answer is that if you want something big in life, you've got to do stuff that sucks. You have to do stuff you don't want to do. Mm. And in our book, Positive Thinking Will Never Change Your Life, as I mentioned, over 100 stories of people that did things that they didn't want to do every day to make the money they want. I've got a great story. I don't know how much time we have about money.
Go ahead.
But, you know, whatever the goal is, if you're willing to get super uncomfortable 5 days a week, you can achieve most of what you want in life.
That's amazing. You know, what a revelation. I know, and I know I instinctively try not to do things that I don't want to do, you know, but I guess you have to go out of your comfort zone, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, my one of my mentors, when I first started out as a public speaker, and he said to me, you know, what do you want to be in life? And I said, I want to be one of the top motivational speakers. And he said, okay, in order to do that, number one, you have got to go back and get your master's degree in psychology, which I did. I chose sports psychology. I went back and got my master's degree. When I completed that, I came to him and I said, his name was Richard Gerson. He's no longer with us, but he was amazing. And I said, Richard, what's next? He said, you have to speak 200 times for free over the next year. 200 times for free, Sam.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And he said, you can't accept a penny because you're not great yet. But at the end of speaking 200 times for free, you're going to be a great speaker. And in doing those two things, going back to school, and when I got my master's degree, I was working full time,
right?
Going to school full time, and that sucked.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. What a workload.
Who wants to do that, right? You know, and I was young. I wanted to party, man. I didn't want to be doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, I did what he said, and then I spoke 200 times for free, and then before I know it, I'm flying all over the world for over 10 years, 40 weeks a year as a professional speaker, but it only came by doing things that were super uncomfortable.
That's true. That's true. I don't know how many people would have done that. 200 times for free? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you put your name out there, right?
It's called stand-up comedy.
What's
it's
that?
Similar, right?
I was saying, I mean, to do something like that, like I do stand-up comedy, and that's what you do. You get up on stage and talk for free a lot, and you keep doing that until you become better to the point where people want to pay you, you know?
Exactly, Rachel. Exactly. But, you know, how many people start out, they want to be a stand-up comedian, but when the money doesn't come in quick enough, they drop their drink.
So many. I mean, that's, I think, with anything, especially even in the entertainment industry, you know, it's, if you're looking for quick validation or quick success, then the entertainment industry or business is not for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just, you have to work hard, yeah. David.
Yeah. And so, you know, I used to teach all the nonsense about the power of the mind. And now we say this, guys, and I still love positive thinking. You know, the first hour of every day, I'm in prayer, meditation, journaling, gratitude. I'm doing heavy-duty, positive work for the first hour.
That's,
and I get up early enough so I have the time to do that and not be rushed. Mm-hmm. 20%, what we say is 20% of someone's success will come from how they think, and 80% will come from their willingness to do what they'd rather not do today. Maybe that's getting up earlier. You know, when I talk to Evelyn, imagine this, you're 245 pounds heavier than you are right now, guys. You are wheeled in a wheelchair into the gym. The whole gym is staring at this unbelievably obese woman being propped up on a treadmill, walking for 3 to 4 minutes, and then being put back in the wheelchair. You want to talk about your ego, humility, right, vulnerability, doing what you don't want to do? Like, for all of your listeners, you know, if you're a fan of the Law of Attraction and The Secret, I got to blow your mind here. Mm-hmm. Is that 80% of those teachings are lies, they're fallacies, and they're illusions. Now, if someone were to have a vision board and on there it says, I win the lottery tomorrow and you win the lottery tomorrow, that is not the power of your mind. That is called a miracle.
Yeah, that's true.
So if, you know, now I'm not saying don't have vision boards and don't have affirmations, but I'm saying, come on, grow up. You know, like, that was really cute in 2007. Right. I used to teach this crap. So if there's anyone that can stand up here on a soapbox and say it was nonsense, it's Dave Vessel.
Yeah.
Because I'm saying I'm sorry. You know, in our new book on focus, I apologize in writing for the ridiculous teachings that I used to teach. And now,
well, there you go. Now, that's uncomfortable to do.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I mean, if we're not willing to call ourselves out and say I'm wrong, you know, I work as a counselor and as a life coach. And when I'm working with couples from all over the world, I say to them the same thing. If you guys can't start apologizing for when you're wrong in this relationship will always suck.
Mm. Makes sense.
So one you the, used to teach the books. Secret, you used to teach those kind of things to people?
Rachel, did you just say that you used to teach that?
I was saying that you used to, The Secret, all that stuff is like BS, right?
Did you?
Yeah, I used to teach it, you know, before it was called The Secret, you know, and before it was called The Law of Attraction,
mm-hmm.
we used to just say it was the power of thought.
The power, yeah. Okay, interesting. So you used to teach people on those, but in the time you didn't, did you believe it when you were teaching it, or did you?
I'm sure you did.
Or,
that is a great question. Rachel, that is a beautiful question. The answer is yes, I believed it because all of my gurus told me it was true.
Mm. Yeah.
How did you find that process didn't work for you? At what point?
Well, that guy asked him, the guru, right?
Was like,
does it work for you?
And you said, true? Yeah, but was that the point where when you realized it wasn't working for you?
Yeah, Rachel, you know what? When Maharishi said to me, you've been saying these affirmations for 25 years about being sober and you drink every night, is that working?
Right.
Yeah, that's true. And that's when you woke up and realized it's not working for you.
Yeah. And you know, right away, I mean, it shattered me. You know, honestly, guys, because all of a sudden I had to look at my life and say I was living a lie.
Right. Yeah, hoping things will happen.
I was a parrot. You know, I was just being a parrot. I was just repeating crap because these million best-selling authors were telling me it was true.
Right.
And I was believing them, but it never happened in my life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know about you guys, and maybe you've had a different experience, but anything big that has ever happened, anything good and big, it's always been because I've had to work my butt off.
Right. I have to agree. You know, I mean, thoughts are thoughts. They're very powerful, but they drive our actions. And if you're just thinking that it's just going to happen, then you could be waiting a long time. You know, you got to take the steps to actually make them actualize your thoughts, you know, and actually make something out of it. And I see what you're saying. You know, people are stuck in this thinking and they keep wishing. You know, I mean, this positive thinking is just wishful thinking. It's not going to happen unless you go out there and do something. You know, I think it's pretty clear, and people don't see that. Many people don't.
You know, guys, the big story, if you remember, and it's still around today, but thank God he's recanted it and explained it. But you remember when Jim Carrey said he put the $10 million check in his pocket, he made $10 million?
I don't remember that, but tell us.
Okay, so Jim Carrey, the actor, he's, you know, broke, homeless, and he takes a check and he writes $10 million to Jim Carrey. So he writes a check to himself
for
$10 million.
And he buried it with his father.
Really?
I'm sorry?
He buried that when his father died, he buried that check with him.
Okay. So he has that check in his wallet, and then all of a sudden, now here's the key, all of a sudden, whenever anyone says all of a sudden, start to look for bullshit. All of a sudden, he gets a movie check for $10 million. And he's on Oprah, and he's all over the place saying, oh my God, you know, the power of thought, the power of visualization. About a year ago, he came on in a YouTube video and explained the reality. Is that, yes, he wrote the check, yes, he put it in his wallet, and then he detailed all of the work that he did to finally get to the level of being an actor earning $10 million for one movie. And it was a long, hard process. But, you know, in our book, Positive Thinking, one of the things we explain is, why are we so attracted to these insane rules and laws like the Law of Attraction and The Secret? And I explain why psychologically in the book. There's something that we created in 1996, guys, called human nature. And the definition of human nature, and everyone listening can probably put themselves right in the middle of this, is human nature is our desire to get the most out of life with minimal effort.
That's true. We don't want to work right? hard.
We want it easy. We want to take the green tea pill and melt 40 pounds of fat off our body, but we don't go on going to the gym 6-7 days a week.
Yeah.
We want to be lazy with our money and not be respecting our money and not work hard for the money, but we want to buy a lottery ticket. You know, and The Secret and the Law of Attraction tapped in to our desire to get the most out of life with minimal effort. So there's a psychological reason that those programs sold millions of copies. I mean, who wouldn't want to sit back, right, make a vision board, put $1 million house on it, put the vision board in a storage center, come out 6 years later and go, oh my God, somehow I'm living here. I mean, that would be great.
Yeah, right.
No, but I was saying, I watched the Jim Carrey, Jim is Andy Kaufman documentary, Jim and Andy. And I think that's where, or it was that, or it was another comedy documentary. But that check that Jim Carrey, the $10 million, he buried it with his father when he died.
Yeah?
Yeah, he put it in his pocket.
Interesting. Wow.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. But you know, but Rachel, the way that everyone took that story was that, you
it was
know,
the
all
power.
Do,
yeah, it was just like all he had to do. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, and so, yeah, I mean, I can't tell you guys, you know, again, working as a counselor and a coach, how many clients over the years have come into me showing me their $10 million check.
Really?
Have you any know, of them ever made $10 million?
What'd you say?
Have any of them ever made $10 million?
Well, they wouldn't be working with me if they did.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's true. Well,
you know, no.
Yeah. David Essel, very interesting. You have a lot to say and a lot of stuff to teach, and that's amazing to me. You're doing a lot of things, obviously, so you're subscribing to what you're saying and to your own, preaching and teaching and so forth. And it seems to work for you. I mean, you're living proof that, you know, that actually putting in the work does pay off. So, David, well, go ahead.
Oh, you go ahead, Sam. I'm sorry.
No. I just want to wrap it up. But go ahead and tell me what you were going to say.
Oh, yeah. No, well, you know, like you, Sam, Rachel, myself, all of your viewers, you know, they're, unless you have some type of a mental disability, emotional disability, there are so many amazing things that you can accomplish in your life if you're willing to do the work that we're talking about. And one final notation I just want to make is that, you know, Colonel Sanders, when he created Kentucky Fried Chicken, he didn't make hardly any money until he was 68 years of age. He put 40 years into that process before he became a millionaire at 68 and then a billionaire at 88. And the question that I would like for your listeners to think about is that, how serious am I? Right. About creating the money, the body, the love life, the career. How serious? And then you look at some of these people that have gone through hell in life and eventually became successful, and they all have a very, very... Oprah Winfrey is another one. They have a very similar story. Mm. They were willing to work their butt off and do what most of us wouldn't want to do.
Right.
And if any of your listeners are listening to this right now, just have them go to my website. We take new clients on every week, and we will rock the world. We really can.
Sounds good. So give people your website, how they can get a hold of you quickly, if they need some guidance, some advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Sam and Rachel, it's really easy to remember. It's just talkdavid.com, TALKDavid.com. Uh-huh. TalkDavid.com, all kinds of great information there. And if you're ready to change your life, I'm ready to help you make it happen.
There you go. I think you qualified. So,
Thank you.
So this works, you know. And but I wanted to ask you one last thing. You know, you say you got to do things you're uncomfortable with. And I know that for many years I did work that I didn't want to do. And it's hard to get up in the morning to do that, you know. And I guess you need really superpowers to really be able to overcome some of these things, you know, because you're comfortable, you have a good job, or you have a job that pays your bills and everything, and you're like, but I hate this job, you know, and you go, well, but that's work, you know, so I have to do what I don't enjoy doing. But at the same time, I do recommend that eventually you get to a point where you do something you do want to do, you know.
Yeah, and Sam, you know, on your point, here's the great news is that once you do that task that you'd rather not, you know, working extra hours to find a new job, getting up early in the morning to exercise or meditate or pray, once you do those uncomfortable steps, they eventually just become who you are.
Right.
And that's the great news. You know, it's like in the world of public speaking, the first several hundred times maybe you go on stage and you're not the best, you're anxious, you're nervous. But if you do it enough and get out of your comfort zone enough, it just becomes who you are. Mm. And it's the same thing with anything in life. And that's the great news. There isn't one of your listeners right now that cannot radically change their life if they're willing to get uncomfortable. And then always remember, what at first is uncomfortable will just become part of who I am. It will be effortless.
Oh, wow. You see, now there's a... there's something to work forward to. And so the book is Positive Thinking Will Never Change Your Life, but this book will. And you also have the upcoming Focus in January, you said.
Yeah, it comes out around January 15th, guys. So we're very excited about that. And my friend Jenny McCarthy, the celebrity, she wrote the foreword to our new book. So we're very excited to have Jenny part of the program as well.
Yeah, there you go. You know, I mean, you're recognized as someone who knows what they're saying, what they're doing, and we appreciate that. It was a very informative conversation, David, and we thank you for bearing with us and calling back and completing the interview for us. You know, so.
Oh, you bet. Oh, Sam, Rachel, oh, I love being out with you guys. If I can ever help again, please don't hesitate.
Sounds good. David Essel, everybody, thank you so much again, David, and all the best to you.
Bye-bye now.
Take care.
Bye. Yeah, yeah. Some people, you know, I mean, that's the thing, and I always said that, you know, and it's something that many life coaches also teach. I remember Tony Robbins, you know, one of the more famous ones, and he talks about action all the time. You know, he says, you know, thoughts are not enough. You got to put it into action. And because otherwise nothing happens. And that's true, you know. I mean, I saw somebody post on Facebook today, oh, I'm sick of the entertainment industry. I've worked my butt off, not making any money, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, you know, what, are you going to give up now, you know, after you put in all that effort?
Well, I always, it's not like, but like, remember we were talking about Tori before she left. I mean, Tori worked so many years out here doing comedy, acting, whatever, radio, and just hearing her story of, and her stories of, you know, from you and her about just like, you got to be relentless. You just, yeah. You can't be afraid of rejection. Just because someone doesn't want you doesn't mean, you know, that there's not a right opportunity for you around the corner. And I remember the photographer, Neil, was it Neil?
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, that we had here.
Yeah,
just,
Neil Preston.
I think it was either him or we were talking with someone. There's a great, there's an article somewhere about some of the greatest entertainers in the industry, from all like painters, actors, actresses, singers, whatever, like Madonna to, I mean, some of the greatest people ever that you could ever imagine, their letters of rejection and just like their experiences,
really?
Of rejection from like some of the biggest people who later on
right.
ended up regretting it, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, for me, it's just you're going to have to, at some point, if you want to be a productive member of society, you're going to have to work hard towards something.
Yeah.
Might as well work hard towards something you like in
exactly.
your dreams. Because exactly. you're going to end up working hard, and if you're going to hate it and resent it so much more if it's not what you want to be doing. So.
Right. And I know that a lot of things I don't do because I don't want to do them, you
right.
know, but it doesn't get me anywhere. You know, I mean, just to, like to wish, oh, I, you know, I'll just wish for good health or whatever. But you got to work out, man. You know, you don't like it, you do it anyway. And that's what I keep telling myself, but I haven't convinced myself yet. So we'll get there. So anyway, so, you know, look, Jerusalem is a very, very controversial. I mean, as far as who owns it, who's got rights to it and everything. And yeah, you know, I mean, there's people that are not happy about it. But again, it makes no sense to me to not make a decision, an important decision, because somebody's threatening violence. You know, it just doesn't work for me. But at any rate, we'll see what happens. Of course, Trump is very unpopular.
Well,
so everything
I saw
he
are,
does.
He, I saw they are trying to move the capital to Jerusalem. That's what I was reading.
No, the embassy, you mean?
No, this is the capital.
They're no, the capital is Jerusalem. For Israel, it is. It's recognized, you know, by many countries. And then
it
again,
says,
it's not
President
recognized.
President Trump, I have determined that it is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. I thought
right,
it was Tel Aviv,
it.
No?
No. It was always Jerusalem.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The embassy was in Tel Aviv because it's the
so
biggest
why
city.
Why is this like a thing if it's always been a thing?
Because it's a thing. Because finally somebody's
does
saying...
Does someone not... Who doesn't recognize Jerusalem as the capital?
Many countries don't.
What do they say the capital is?
Well, first of all, the Arabs, you know, all the Arabs...
What do they think the capital is?
It belongs
is?
To them, of course. You know, that's what they think.
The capital doesn't belong to anyone. It's just a capital. Just like D.C. isn't the Christians. It's not the Republicans.
No, but it belongs to America. They say that Jerusalem is not the capital of
Israel.
No, they don't see that. They don't see that. Neither has America, because no president before has made that move because they were too afraid of Arab.
I see what they're saying. They're thinking that if you name it, that if it, Jerusalem is the capital, then that means it's just simply a Jewish state?
That it belongs to Israel, and the Palestinians won't go for that. Because they
why
feel
can't it just belong to everyone there?
Because somebody's got to, you know, I mean, someone has claims to it. And
yeah,
Israel
but we would never give D.C. to the Republicans.
What do you mean?
Like
no, but you're mixing Jews and Israelis. You know, the thing is it's not about religion. It's about the fact that Israel has been recognized as a state and was given at least part of Jerusalem. Okay, the UN divided Israel where the Arabs had a lot more land than Israel did. Okay, and the history goes.
Why does it have to be their land, our land? Why can't people just live where they want to live?
Because it doesn't work like that. These people want
that's
to have their own stuff.
That's why religion is crazy.
But yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. But it's more than religion. I mean, it has to do with the fact that they hate Israel. They hate the Jewish people. They want to destroy, annihilate everything. And you can say that pretty much about most Arabs, you know, most Arab countries, if not all. You know, so that's what happens.
I don't want to say most, if not all, Arab countries hate Jews. Do I think that there are people in Arab countries?
No, I mean, as a country, the governments, the, you know, the way they, you know. But I think you'd be hard-pressed to find many Jew-loving people in the Arab countries. But the bottom line is that this is what Israel has faced from the beginning. And it's not... it's not a point of there's no argument there. I mean, Israel has laid claim to it. It's never going to change. And you know, and the thing is, what people don't understand also is Israel was declared, the land was divided for Arabs and Jews, and the Jews were okay with it. But the moment that it was declined, the moment it was it became independent and Israel announced its independence, 18 Arab countries attacked it. Okay, so now I'm asking you, Rachel, and Israel prevailed. You know, the thing is, you announce a new country, everybody wants to destroy you, start a war, and then you win, and you take some of the land, and now they want it back. You know, the thing is, it's all violent there all the time. But you think about this. If Arabs lay down their arms, there'll be peace. If Jews lay down their arms, there will be no Jews. There will be no Israel. There will be nothing.
I just think no one should have anything there.
You think nobody should have anything?
Any guns or they shouldn't be fighting. Just live. Just live your lives. Go to school.
You think you're going to get millions of people to tell them just live your life?
I just wish that they would just stop fighting. Go to work. Go to school. Go take care of your family. Don't worry so much about what other people are doing. Just focus on being
right,
a good person.
Right, but is that a realistic thing to say? Think about it. Human nature is not like that.
Is it so much to ask to want to live in a peaceful world?
Everybody wants to, but they don't know how.
Because
you have the leaders.
When you involve religion, it makes people feel as if they're better than the other.
But it's also politics as well. There's a lot of politics here, yeah. But, there's racism here. Given the option, the Jews would be annihilated again if there was no Israel today. You know, people don't understand that. The Jews have been chased for thousands of years. They finally find their own land and everybody wants them dead again. So, the thing is that Israelis have decided the hell with what the world says. We're going to do whatever it takes to survive. And that's what it comes down to, So Trump says it's time to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. It's expected to inflame tensions. But again, I think you'll be hard pressed to change your plans or opinion because somebody's threatening violence. That's just not the way it is. That's bullying, But he's not a popular president. Everything that he does is not popular. So this is going to create a lot of things too. And that's fine, whatever. But for Israel, it's an important thing because Israel has always wanted America to recognize it and its existence. And America has. But as far as Jerusalem, presidents in the past have been afraid to piss off the Arabs. And that's why they didn't do it, Also, Democratic senators are saying to Al Franken, asking him to resign.
It's like if you're going to ask him to resign, you got to ask Trump to resign because Trump also has over 20 women coming forward accusing him. It's just like why? If I agree, Franken should resign, then fucking Trump should resign. Call for all of their resignations.
Right, and they will. They will. People already are calling for his impeachment.
Well, yeah, I guess Representative Al Green presents articles of impeachment against Trump to the House, but,
really?
He'll never go anywhere because...
Yeah. Well, I guess there was some commotion about a tweet that apparently was from his lawyer, and people are saying it couldn't have been his lawyer because lawyers don't do that. Yeah, they don't do that. They doubt that Trump would let his lawyer tweet under his name. Mm-hmm. And besides, so he says the president cannot be charged with obstruction of peace, of
obstruction
justice.
Obstruction of justice.
Obstruction of justice because he's the president.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. I don't know what's going to happen there, but it's just not a good time to be here right now. There's a lot of division in this country, and I don't know how we'll ever bridge that again.
Yep.
It's very, very sad. All right, well, folks, we're out of time. We thank David Essel for calling in. Everybody check out his site, Talk Dave. Or was it Talk David? I don't remember. But David Essel, ESSEL.com, would also take you there. So you can check that out. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.